David Humphrey, welcome.
Nice to meet you.
Now it's almost time for the Indy 500's drivers to start their engines, and you've chronicled a lot of the love and lore and legend around this beloved Hoosier sport of auto racing in your new book, Indiana's Lost Speedways and Legendary Drivers. Besides the Indy Motor Speedway, Indiana is still home to a large number of important dirt and asphalt oval tracks. What contributed to that original popularity, do you think?
Oh, I believe just local residents could race at those tracks. You know, you could put a car together. I was told by several drivers they would just find parts everywhere and make a jalopy and race like Sun Valley and Anderson and some of the other tracks around here. But the smaller tracks are made mainly for local drivers. And a lot of them were very famous on local level.
How have those numbers, the sheer numbers of tracks, changed over the last 120 years?
I counted, I believe, 40-some left in the state. And I'm not sure how many there were, maybe 50 or 60 years ago. But it's dwindled. It's down a lot.
So with all your research and everything, what do you think is the main drive with people's attraction to auto racing, the doing it as well as watching it?
Oh, I think people enjoy auto racing because they wish they were out there doing it themselves, racing in a car and going around the track. No matter what, if it's a small track, an Indy 500, or drag racing even, I think people just enjoy speed and they wish they were out there doing it themselves, crossing that finish line and getting the trophy.
Because the checkered flag and all the speed that you acquire as you're doing it too has to count for a lot. Now, you present quite literally a photo album of popular racetracks and drivers from back in the earliest days of auto racing. How did you settle on that format rather than a chronological history of the racing in Indiana?
Well, I submitted the idea to Arcadia about just drivers, legendary drivers from Indiana, and they said, why not do something on tracks that are no longer around, some of the dirt tracks throughout the state? And then I started doing research and found there were quite a few that have shut down just in recent years. Well, 20 or 30 years, they're gone. That's how the book got started. My publisher said, why don't we add tracks to the drivers and just make a complete book on racetracks and drivers from Indiana.
So using pictures, you really do chronicle what happened when and how popular the sport was right here in the state.
Right.
And the racetracks and types you feature include Anderson's Soapbox Derby, Through, Warsaw's Speedway Superstocks. How do you rank the sheer variety, including the sprints and the midgets and the Indian Indy Minis and their longtime crowd appeal?
Well, I think everyone loves Indianapolis 500 first. That's the big race in the state. But a lot of people love the dirt tracks more than asphalt. I think there's more excitement and there's more racing to it. And there's a new dirt track in Indianapolis that just opened. I think people are pretty excited about that.
So the desire for more, faster, better, and new continues.
Oh, yes.
Opening
sure.
A new one. Okay, now with the Indianapolis 500 and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and everything kind of being the king.
Right.
The top of the pyramid for all of this. Anderson's Soapbox Derby history is really quite something, too. And that's what you start your book with. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when I was younger, it was such a huge deal. I mean, my dad would drive me out there at Derby Downs on Madison Avenue, and it would just be packed. I mean, hundreds of people would be out there watching these kids race. And it was just a big event in Anderson. It's no longer around, as far as I know. I think they had one a few years ago, but there weren't many participants. It was a big deal back in the 60s and 70s and 1950s. So I'd say through the 50s to the 70s, the Anderson Soapbox Derby was one of the biggest in the state. You know, several of those drivers went to Akron, and a couple of them were national champions.
So it all went into the auto racing food chain that really is an international big deal.
Right. I wanted to do more research to find out how many successful drivers were Soapbox Derby drivers, but I kind of ran out of time on the book. But I can still do that someday.
Sounds like another good title right there that
yeah,
you've got
right.
going. Okay, now let's add in the legendary Indiana-born drivers. Has racing always been a family affair, would you say, from the research you've done?
Yeah. Several drivers, their sons got involved too, and daughters. If you know the last name, then someone will say, yes, I know the sons and, you know, the nephew. And yeah, it just kind of goes down the line from the one who started racing first and the offsprings and nieces, nephews, and grandchildren race as well.
How many of those families are still out there racing? Or to say, how many of the familiar racing names are still family names?
The Kinzer family is still involved with the racing. Bob Kinzer was the great driver, and his sons got involved, and they're still around, down around Bloomington, I believe.
So it continues. Now, up here in the Fort Wayne area, we had a wonderful showing of just about every oval track variation you can think of, even after World War II, when TV changed a lot of sports appetites. Is that a statewide phenomenon, would you say? Was that maybe the beginning of the end of some of these tracks?
I think, like you said, television hurt a lot. Because, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't have cable yet, so we listened to the 500 on the radio. I mean, that was just a big deal in our neighborhood. And I think that, you know, why go to a track if you can watch it on television? I mean, and that's a lot of people's attitude. I think a big thing that's hurt, you have to have a lot of money to race. And if there's no money, you can't own a car and you can't hire drivers or have a pit crew or mechanics. And I think that's hurt people a lot also.
And even the cost of going to a race, be it the Indy 500 or the local track.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As you were researching this book, and obviously the whole subject fascinates you, were there surprises along the way, the more that you read, the more that you learned, the more that you connected with?
Well, one story that I thought was funny was Jungle Park when it was open. It's in western Indiana, in the Rockville area, it's Park County. They would let people cross the track to go to the concession stand who were in the infield. And I thought that was the most dangerous track in Indiana. Then they let the spectators cross the track to go to the concession stand. I thought that kind of added to the excitement of the racetrack.
It certainly would. I doubt it would pass any kind of inspection these days. Of course, to be fair, back in those early days, things like roll bars and even really protective fireproof clothes were not yet invented or established yet. What kind of memorabilia and pieces of history like that are still around, have you noticed?
Well, the Anderson Library had a few items from the old Little 500 back in the 50s and 60s. They had a few photographs. And there's a gentleman in Anderson. He's a collector. He had just a ton of memorabilia from Sun Valley. But, you know, it's sad. You call around and a lot of stuff has just been thrown away. Photographs, trophies, nothing's left. And a lot of the tracks are gone, too. You can find remnants of them if you look hard enough. Like Alexandria Speedway, Arms Camp, you can still see the track where it was, but everything else is gone.
And that's another one of the racetracks that you mentioned in your book. How did you determine which tracks to track and follow?
I found a list on the internet and I went from there. I started calling around to see who had stories or posters or photographs that I could go through. That's how I decide on what would go in the book. A lot of places, no one had anything for me to look at. And a lot of people are older now, and a lot of people are deceased, and no one remembers anything. So I just went with the tracks that had items for me to look at.
And a little bit of a past that you could grab onto and pursue.
Right.
Are you having luck with the oral histories? Are people coming forward with stories?
Oh, yeah. The book's already published, but people still send me emails or something on Facebook about my dad drove here, my uncle drove here, and that's still interesting to me. Even though the book's published, I like to hear stories about what people did in the past.
You being a Hoosier, it sounds like you've been bit by the racing bug. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. On the 500 next week, so I'll be there.
Okay. I bet you're going to be one of a big crowd. That's curious all in itself, being down there and in sort of the race zone and doing this book in this last year of the pandemic and everything that went with that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, did that help or hinder your own research for this book?
It hurt for a while because after I signed my contract, the pandemic hit and I thought, what am I going to do? Because everything's closed. Several libraries and museums were going to talk to me and then they couldn't because the staff were on leave or no one had access to museums. So I was kind of sweating it out for a while until things finally started opening up again. And I got the book rolling and got it finished. At first, it was kind of touch and go.
It had to have been. And meanwhile, being one of the race fans that didn't get to go last year because there was no race.
Right.
What are you feeling? What are you hearing down there nearer the center of activity getting ready for this year's Indy 500?
I think they're having 3 practice days this week and qualifications next weekend. I heard there's just a lot of confusion about ticket sales. They had an April 23rd deadline, I believe, to get your tickets. And after that, even if you had them before, you couldn't get your tickets. So I think everything's out. I ordered my ticket 2 or 3 months ago, and I was just one of the lucky ones that, you know, they fulfill my order.
Yes, congratulations on that. You're a winner this year.
Yeah, thanks.
So coming full circle, the Indiana Racing Memorial Association was established in 2013 to preserve the sport. And you've worked with them to produce this book. In your mind, how is the drive to preserve this sport and its rich history going?
Oh, great. They've done a fantastic job. I've gone to a couple of their memorial marker unveilings. It's just great what they're doing. There are a lot of drivers they've honored or even racetracks I had no idea existed until the IRMA stepped forward and remembered those places and people. It's just great what they do for the history of Indiana auto racing.
It sounds like they're preventing this from becoming an endangered species. The sport itself is being carried on. But without the tradition, so much would be lost. Now, you have proved with your book that there's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of spirit. There's a lot of heart and soul that goes into it. Are you feeling confident that going forward, we can be remembering and, well, there's one new track already, but is this bringing the sport and everything that it stands for into the 21st century, would you say?
I think so. I hope when we get through this pandemic that 500 can get back to full capacity next year and people can go to the smaller tracks and enjoy their favorite drivers. And, you know, it's a family thing, too. On Saturday nights, people take their kids to the racetrack, just like a little family event. And hopefully we'll get back to that once everything gets back to normal. But we do have to preserve history to let future generations know about the drivers and the tracks and the owners and
everything that makes racing what it is today. Yeah.
Right.
Now, I am curious, David, and since you are one, my last question, a person might not have to be a Hoosier to get the passion for all things Indiana auto racing, but what makes it so very special for all of us, including yourself, that do?
Well, you know, Indiana's known for basketball, but if you're an auto racing fan, you say it's known for auto racing. And my son, some of his friends from out of state, and he was talking about the Indianapolis 500, and they couldn't believe that he had gone. They just thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And he thought it was funny because he only lives 30 miles away from the Speedway. So it's a great thing for us to go, but still it's just something we grew up with. And a lot of people in Indiana feel the same way. People from around the world come here. And for a lot of Hoosiers, they just go because it's here. You know, it's just no big deal anymore to just go to the 500 and enjoy yourselves and love it. Yeah, it's like it's in your backyard.
Indiana native, Pendleton resident David Humphrey is the author of Indiana's Lost Speedways and Legendary Drivers. Thank you so much for joining me today, David. Motor on. Good work. Keep it up.
Thank you very much.